Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to Love Letters Live, which our regular listeners know is a weekly presentation of personal stories, personal successes, triumphs, challenges overcome, just any aspect of life that our wonderful guests are willing to share, and a love letter to follow, because Teresa and I know, and maybe you do too, that in any experience in life are the seeds of what could be a beautiful love letter to somebody, a letter of gratitude, a letter of recognition, appreciation of the other guy. And why not, we say, write it and stamp it and mail it and make somebody else's life richer? And we, in our years of doing this and our workshops, we have never seen a love letter that hasn't changed a life, whether it's a huge change or a small change. And sometimes love letters are written really in the face of such tragedy that the life they change is that of the writers for putting it on paper. And when you do this, of course, you put your best self on paper. I want to introduce Rita Abrams, who is our guest today. And Rita is somebody that many of you may know. She is a 2-time Emmy Award winner as a songwriter. She was a school teacher for a brief while in Mill Valley. And would you please, Rita, just tell us about you and this song that I could actually sing if I weren't too shy to do it?
Well, it is ironic that after 40 years, which is the anniversary that we recently celebrated of the song, that's still the thing that I most remember.
Yes.
So I guess that's kind of the way it works. And
the title?
It's called Mill Valley. Mm-hmm. And I was a teacher in Mill Valley at the time, and a kindergarten teacher. And I was walking through Mill Valley on Christmas Day of 1969, and it occurred to me that it was such a wonderful town that it needed to have a song written about it. And I had always written songs, and I had almost pursued music and then gotten into teaching.
Let's get back to that after you tell us, because I'd like to know about that.
Yeah. And so, and so I just was struck by what a beautiful town it was and sat down on a bench by the then bus depot and wrote this little song. I always say the song wrote itself because it was the simplest thing I ever did. And then it became, I had met a producer, and he was a big-time record producer, and he liked it, and he put it out, and it was turned into an international hit record.
And you sang it with your students, didn't you?
I initially recorded it with my kindergarten class in the classroom. They brought the musicians in and all the instruments in and the equipment, and then it turned out that the kindergartners mistook yelling for singing.
Uh-huh, sure.
And so we re-recorded it with a third grade. We borrowed a third grade.
But I remember the children's voices to this day.
Yeah, yeah. And it worked out beyond anybody's wildest dreams.
How did it change your life? How did it?
Totally changed my life in that, in so many ways. I mean, one is that it was just a total fantasy come true. I mean, it was beyond anything I could have ever imagined, just having suddenly being famous and having a song, having my music get out there in a way that made people happy. And we got so much validation.
Do you have a website?
I do.
On which people can hear this song?
Oh, yes. Well, if you go to, either you could go to RitaAbrams.com.
R-I-T-A.
R-I-T-A-A-B-R-A-M-S. RitaAbrams.com. And there will be a note on there where you can actually click on the film, the video of the song that was made by Francis Ford Coppola, who was a young filmmaker who Warner Brothers hired to you know, make the movie of the song with the kids and me singing. Or you can go to YouTube and Google Miss Abrams, Strawberry Point Third Grade Class.
Miss Abrams, Strawberry Point Third Grade Class on YouTube.
Yeah, or even just the Mill Valley song, any number of those ways.
I'm going to go do that when I get home today.
Okay. Yeah.
So tell us about you and music. You said, where were you from? Where are you from?
From Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh.
And ever since I was a little girl, I mean, I was a very creative, expressive little girl, and I always wrote in my diaries, and I think that partly came from I had wonderful parents and a wonderful family, but they weren't the kind of parents who really welcomed my expression of my inner thoughts and feelings, and so I needed desperately to get them out, so I wrote in my diaries all my life. And I also wrote songs and wrote, I always wrote parodies for family gatherings.
Are you an only child?
And no, I had two brothers. I have two brothers, one older, one younger. But in some ways, I was kind of like an only child because I was so different from my brothers. So, I always express myself through music and through poems.
Was that thrilling to your parents, or was that foreign to them as people?
They
who
were entertained by it, but it never occurred to them really that that would be a way that I would end up making a living or working professionally. It, in those days, not many people even thought about
that. You were probably supposed to be a teacher, right?
Right.
So how did that come about that you... Yeah. I mean, did you study music and want to be a musician? Or?
Well, what it came about very circuitously. It's so funny. It's when I finally... I mean, I had a girls' band when I was in graduate school in special ed in Boston, but I also was in a little girls' band.
Yes, it was the band that was small people, not the girls. Okay, just
right,
to clarify.
Right, right. And, and so we tried, and we almost had a record contract, and then that kind of fell apart. And so I figured, I'm meant to teach. That's really my profession. And
did you have a feel for that? Is that something you looked forward to doing?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I did. I did. I mean, I didn't have a total passion for it, but when I found kindergarten teaching, it seemed to be a good calling for me, and it was just accidental that I found Mill Valley. All of that was so... My mother had wanted me to be a music major and, you know, study music in college, and I was an English major instead. And I think because she had wanted me to be a music major, I couldn't be a music major. And then only after I gave up on a music career and was pretty happily engaged with my teaching career, and I wrote this little song, then suddenly I was completely involved in the world of music.
How? What happened after that?
And well, then what happened was the record came out, and it was, as I said, produced by Eric Jacobson, who was a big-time record producer, but he did it all on his own. He had a contract with Warner Brothers, which enabled him to produce anything he wanted to with their money and with the stipulation that they get to hear it. They get right of first refusal. And so he did it all on his own, and then he took it to the sales meeting, and unannounced, and all the guys in the business suits stood up and gave it a standing ovation.
Oh, my.
And it was out in 10 days. They put a rush release on it, and it was all over the world in 10 days.
Was it all over the world?
It was worldwide.
Living in the Bay Area, I remember when it first hit the radios, but I didn't realize all over the world.
Well, you know, I mean, that's why I've written a book about it that I'm, you know, hoping to get published about the whole story, because I realize as I keep, even now, getting these amazing fan letters.
We're going to talk about those, yes.
And they're just astounding. Mm-hmm. And the people who keep either looking for the record or finding it or...
What does it say to people? Why is it so touching?
You know, that's just it. I think there was a Canadian disc jockey who said when it came out, everybody has a Mill Valley in his heart. Mm-hmm. And so it seemed like a kind of a fantasy place, and to me it was I was singing and writing about exactly what I felt Mill Valley was, and it
can
resonated.
You tell us the lyrics?
I'm going to talk about a place that's got a hold on me, and then the kids sing Mill Valley.
Yes.
A little place where life is very fine and free, where people aren't afraid to smile and stop and talk with you a while, and you can be as friendly as you want to be. Mill Valley, talking about Mill Valley, that's my home. The kids came in on the chorus.
Yes.
And there are more lyrics, but that's the first verse. Yeah, and the last
verse. It's a bit like Camelot.
Pardon?
It's a bit like Camelot.
Yeah.
And the magical place.
Yes.
Yes, and the musical version of comfort food, where people can just be comfortable and relax and be themselves.
Right, and you know...
So that would touch everybody. Who wouldn't want to be there, yes.
I agree. And the thing is that, I'm just a superficial listening, it to some I'm sure sounded corny, but I really strove to not make it so... Like, the difference between people aren't afraid to smile and stop and talk with you a while versus talk to you a while.
Oh,
I labor over
you.
That. And even now, people, sometimes it gets mistaken in print, and they say to instead of with. And also, you can be as friendly as you want to be. To me, that was way more than everybody's friendly.
Right.
If you don't want to talk to anybody, you don't have to. People,
it's all permission to be yourself.
Yeah, and live and let live.
Do you think if you had been raised in a family where all that self-expression was just sought after, that you would have accomplished the same thing? Or would you have spent it?
You know, I think I would have spent it, and it's very interesting that you asked that. I wish I had the quote with me. I found a quote when I was reading, I think it was Maya Antonia, and he made that statement about how when you just, you know, spill your feelings and your impressions and your poetry all over the place, you express it everywhere, you don't end up expressing it in a way that is immortal.
In that focused, yes. I would agree with that. That's why I asked you.
That's why times when I'm, you know, happiest, I'm not necessarily the most creative.
Well, let's talk about love letters, if we could. Because I see that, you know, Teresa and I say people never throw them away. And I see that you've got yours in a neat little folder in glassine pages.
Well, this happens to be the folder that contains my book proposal for my Mill Valley. Oh, but then I thought when we talked, I had... There were three categories of love letters that came to mind, and this was one of them, which was fan mail, basically. But letters...
Oh, well, let's talk about that for a minute, because one of our favorite... Well, we have so many favorite kinds of love letters, but one of them is the fan letter. As a love letter, and we actually had a guest come up some time ago from L.A. to write a fan letter / love letter to Roger Ebert, who had made a huge difference in his life.
Oh, I love that.
And it is a gorgeous letter. And, you know, to write a love letter to the people who entertain us and make us feel valuable and tell you that we can be as friendly as we want to be. What you're doing for people is enormous. You're saying something for us. You're letting us be something special through your voice.
Well, it's interesting.
Of course you deserve a love letter.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, when you've been working and writing music and writing shows for, you know, a long time, and you're confronted with the fact that this simple little song that you wrote 40 years ago is still the most well-known thing you've ever done, it can be a little bit demoralizing. And then I always have to remind myself, or sometimes somebody reminds me for me when they send me something by email, a note that somebody from out of the past or somebody I've never met, about what my song meant to them. And then I have to realize it's not about, you know, the scope or the length of the thing that you've created.
Or the musical complexity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What you've given to people is a huge gift. Could we hear a few of those? And then I have another question.
Sure, sure, yeah. This was one from, the subject was Thank You from a Vet, and it came to me a couple years ago, and it said, Rita, it was in the later 1970s that I got to listen to your music from your album, Miss Abrams and the Strawberry Point Fourth Grade Class. I never knew what an impact it made on me. Then in 1991, I was in a foxhole and running around the desert. And when I was scared beyond my means and to no width's end, I would close my eyes and part my mind, and I would hear Mill Valley come into it. In a little bit, I was again at peace. One day I hope to thank you for not only bringing me beautiful music, but a calm in a dangerous time I have never known. Even today, I fight with severe PTSD, but your songs bring me peace inside of me. I can only remember the words, though, through my heart. Sadly, I lost the vinyl record, and I cried because this is the music I loved. I thought to myself, if I could only have this album, and even if it was just your signature and not the other performers, I would cherish this until my dying breath.
Oh, my goodness.
Again, thank you for an island of peace in my hardship. God bless. Robert Worthington, Seattle, Washington.
Well, I can't talk.
I mean, that's only one.
Did you send him a vinyl?
Of course. Yeah.
I imagine you did.
I ended up communicating with him. And then this one was...
Before you go on, I have to ask. I see that you have all these typed out. I'm assuming these were handwritten letters.
No, these were emails that came
to me. Oh, this is all late enough that they were emails.
The first time I started realizing about this impact was many, many years after, you know, the song came out. Because I would occasionally get... At first, I got a slew of written... You know, handwritten emails in the mail. And sometimes
handwritten
they'd say,
letters.
Miss Abrams, Mill Valley, and they would come to me. But then as the song died down, and, you know, I never heard anything. And then Mill Valley got a website when the Internet came into being. And then I started getting these letters via this 941 Mill Valley web address.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized people were writing to the Mill Valley website.
Okay.
And then... Now, in the more sophisticated times where, you know, they have access and they can find you, or they can Google you, and now I'm getting them directly. But I have a huge collection of handwritten.
Yes. I mean, you know, Teresa and I always talk about handwriting. And don't you get an extra thud when you see something in handwriting?
Oh, it's quite, yeah. Uh-huh. Yes.
There's such magic in that. But we do live in changing times, and sometimes you can't. And we should say that out loud, really, for the sake of love letter.
We'll accept the email ones, too,
yeah.
right?
Because, exactly. sometimes that's the only address you can have. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was having I'm rehearsing for a show that I'm doing, and one of the actors were talking about stationery just last night.
Oh, we talk about that.
Stationery, how much they used to get love getting stationery and sending it on their special stationery. And
yes.
We were just talking about that, yeah.
Do you have a favorite stationery from when you were a child?
I don't think so, but I know that I always say if somebody gave me a big check, I'd run over to Ideal Stationers and just
spend
it all.
Me too. Yellow Cranes, that kind of never mind. This isn't about me. So,
yeah.
But I do. Okay, so read us maybe a couple of more. I mean, and by the way, when we say every love letter changes a life, in some way. Every one of these that you get has to change your life in a direction of ratcheting up. For
it is always a gift. It's a huge gift.
And re-reminding you how important what you've done is.
Yes.
Let's hear some more.
Yeah, yeah. So this is from Jack Williams. And I've gotten permission, by the way, to use these names.
Good.
Miss Abrams, I heard your song Mill Valley in 1970 on an Armed Forces Vietnam radio station while serving with the Army in Nha Trang, Vietnam. At that time, I'm 60 years old now, but still have fond memories of the song. I read a magazine article about you a number of years ago and found your website tonight while burning a CD of some golden oldies. While many of us have unfortunate memories of that era, my memories of the song are one of the good memories. Wishing you well. And here's another one from the School of the Blind when I was at Berkeley, this person wrote. And thank you for bringing joy into the lives of so many. And there were just, there are many, many more.
Well, we have enough time for a few more. Mm-hmm. I'd like to, and then we'll talk about something
else.
Did you get a lot from Armed Forces people?
There were quite a few, which was really astounding.
Because you brought home to wherever they were,
yes,
right?
Yes, and I mean, you know what else was very fascinating was that I would say the vast majority, like 95%, of my fan mail comes from men rather than women, which is truly amazing.
Oh, I could take a guess at that. Is that Mama's Sweet Lullaby voice?
Oh, I suppose it could be, yeah.
Yes. You know, men who need comforting and are open to it.
That's very sweet. I never thought about that explanation.
Because you talk about home and the comfort.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Let's hear a couple more.
Let's see. Some of these are just from, this is not quite so deeply moving, but just wanted to tell you I love that song and with your permission would love to play it at one of my gigs. Since you lived here in Boston at one point, I must say that you are missing one heck of a winter.
No.
A lot of people are very, you know, he's from Boston. People from all over the world. Where else? One from Mexico. How many times I remember your wonderful Mill Valley song. I am from Santa Barbara in San Luis Obispo, and I'm retired Army, another mm-hmm. Army. You're welcome here in Cuernavaca, Mexico. And
so I just have other thoughts as you're reading this. In addition to is being your voice. But read that last one again.
From Cuernavaca, Mexico. This one, how many times I remember your wonderful Mill Valley song. I remember when it came out. Many thanks 38 years later for this musical treat. I was 17. I am from Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo and retired Army. You are always welcome here at your country home near Cuernavaca, Mexico.
Okay, so the other thought that I had is the fact that you sang with children. You know, there's so much in our society about, and I think it's a given, that, you know, without children, we have nothing. If we're the last generation. What was that movie about where there were no more children being born? It was fairly recent.
I don't think I saw that.
Children of Men? I think that's what it was called. Mm-hmm. And it was just gripping. There were no more children being born. The world was at war. It was grim. And it was the fact that there were no more children, that nobody had anything to live for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had read A History of San Francisco a few years ago for some reason and was very touched by the fact that when these grisly old miners would come down to the boats because the boats were bringing, you know, the women and these old fellows would go down to the docks to see them coming off, it wasn't the women that they were after. They wanted to know if they could touch the baby.
Oh,
when women got off
sweet.
With the baby, they were after people hanker for children.
Yeah, that's
And
that
I'm wondering
sense.
The power of your particular song.
I'm sure that makes a lot of sense. And of course, you know, they were such, even then, simpler times.
Yes.
Which at that time people were harkening back to the 50s, and you know, this was already the 70s, but here we are
yes.
in the next millennium, and times are much more complicated, and children are
part of your power. I want to ask you something. Are your parents still living?
They are not.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I'm thinking, you know, in the world of love letters, have you ever written to them? Did you ever? Do you write love letters yourself?
I do. I mean, I acknowledge a lot, and that mm-hmm. was, you know, I definitely express when I have feelings of gratitude. And for my parents, I expressed it in many ways. I don't know if I ever sent one mm-hmm. definite love letter.
Yes.
But certainly as I was seeing my mother through her last years not long ago, and I was trying very hard to communicate to her how much, you know, every single thing that she had done for me over the years, which unfortunately, when they're still alive, sometimes we don't always fully appreciate
right.
it.
That's true, how, of course. That's normal. But yeah. what I'm thinking is, you know, no matter how many times we tell people what we feel, sometimes seeing it on paper.
Absolutely.
Are your brothers still?
Absolutely. My brothers both are alive, and I'm my older brother. I have a lot of feelings for my older brother, that good feelings mm-hmm. that I've never really fully expressed.
Oh.
And I think about that.
If we were to ask you right now, which is what we do, who would get your love letter today and right now, just from your looking back at your life as...
Well, in terms of people who are in my life now, he would be a good candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And what I came here preparing to talk about was a teacher that I had had.
Oh, please.
And,
yes.
And how I had planned mm-hmm. for many years... I kept putting it off, but he changed my life totally.
How?
In fact, I started writing a book some time ago about that subject.
How did he change your life?
Celebrities about the teacher who changed their lives, and this was one who definitely changed my life.
How?
And of course the story is that I just kept putting it off, and finally I got it together, and I said, I've got to do this, and I went to get his address, and I started contacting people at the Boston University School of Education. He had just passed away the week before.
Oh, yes.
And on the way in here, I was thinking, I should probably still write the letter.
Yes. That's yeah. what we vote yes.
Because I'm sure you talk about writing letters to the deceased.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Can you say, I don't want to, you know, ever ask anything that's too personal, but if you can say how he changed your life?
Yes, absolutely. He was a teacher in the Graduate School of Education at Boston University, where I had a fellowship to study special education. Mm-hmm. I was going to be teaching emotionally disturbed children. And I didn't know anything about this particular teacher, but he taught a course called Freedom and Authority in mm-hmm. Education. And what I found was that despite all my education in Cleveland Heights, Ohio gave me good education, English gave me good education in grammar and mm-hmm. punctuation, but I had not gotten a lot of training in speaking in front of the class, in articulating, in abstracting, in analyzing, conceptualizing literature or history. And when I went to college, my first college undergrad, Simmons College in Boston, I was quite intimidated by a lot of those Eastern girls who were mm-hmm. so smart, and they could do that so adeptly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I transferred to University of Michigan, honors English, and I was terrified to talk in class
oh.
because there were these intellectual giants who they probably just liked to hear themselves talk, but they could put words together like I had never seen, and I had never been able, I'd never even been called upon to do that myself. So I was literally would shake every time I had to speak in class, in that honors English class. And there was a certain disdain they had, those other students had too, for someone who spoke in simpler language. And so I went on to graduate school, which was education, not quite so heady and abstract. And I signed up for this course. And the first, I walked in and there were all these adults, like people in, you know, superintendents of schools and nuns, and at that time there were habits, real habits, and people from all walks of life, and which I found very intimidating. And at the first day of class, and everybody's buzzing, and teacher doesn't show up, and it's getting later and later, and suddenly he passes a letter in that says, "This is a course in freedom and authority in education. You are cordially invited to create your own course content.
Oh.
I will be in my office as a resource person." And to make a long story short, that was the beginning of a life-changing experience, because people started going crazy. There was chaos in the room. Nobody knew. It was a perfect illustration mm-hmm. of these concepts, mm-hmm. freedom and authority. And the nuns just filed into his office, and they said, "We want the content that this man has to offer." And literally it was delineated by, you know, the groups of people. They went in and he taught them every week. The rest of us found it very fascinating, kind of sculpting together this course. And I found that it took me weeks to even utter my first word out loud to this group. And then I did, and then nobody spat on me or left me. And then slowly I became more and more articulate as I realized that what I had to say was...
Because you're just gold star at it. I'm listening to
it. And it had nothing to do with what I had read or, you know. And so that changed my life
totally. So will you write this letter to him?
Yes.
Because obviously, if you just say to him everything that you just said out loud here,
yes,
that will be a gorgeous, what we would call, love letter, because right. it's about the other guy.
Right.
You're talking about what he brought to you.
Right.
Now, where would you send it?
I would send it to heaven, I guess.
Yes, I know. Don't you wish there were an address? So what do you do? That's
it would be
a good
nice
question.
To know who his heirs were.
Maybe you could find out.
Possibly.
And if you can't, mm-hmm. maybe you could send a copy to yourself
mm-hmm.
for now
mm-hmm.
and don't open it.
Mm-hmm.
And just wait. And mm-hmm. when you do find his heirs,
mm-hmm.
you can just slip that envelope unopened.
Good idea.
Into another envelope, and they'll have the date on it. So even if it takes you 10 years,
yeah,
they'll
yeah.
know that you haven't forgotten. You've been thinking about this, and
That's
that'll be
good.
A gift of gold. And of course, you'll date it.
That's great.
Sometimes we have to remind people to date things. It's
yes.
really important.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Just coming here, and it's just such a pleasure to meet the woman behind the Mill Valley song.
Well, thank
which
you.
Which we all sang in our car radios day after day after day. And joined in with the children's chorus.
That's great. Well, I hope somebody's written love letters to the two of you for what you're doing, because
we do get love letters. Thank you.
It's worthy, definitely, of
and
love
we
letters.
Love to receive
we're having
them.
A whale of a time. It's so nice to be able to be around
it's
people.
It's a wonderful thing. Really a great thing that you're doing.
Thank you, Rita.
Yeah.
And thank you to all our listeners. Unfortunately, we're out of time for this week, but we hope you'll join us every week at this time. And in the meantime, please do put your own loving thoughts into words, write them down, put them in an envelope, stamp and mail them while you still have the chance.
And remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So, till next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.
Bye.